It's time for another episode of The Scoop. Get ready to talk Temple Athletics with John DiCarlo, Kyle Gauss, Matt Vender, and Dalton Balthaser.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Season 3, Episode 2 of The Scoop. I'm Dalton Balthaser, returning from the dead, and my weekly Wednesday above the liners, Matt Vender, Kyle Gauss, John DiCarlo. Good to see you guys.
Above the line, above the line, like on the line.
Nobody can see who you're pointing to,
but they all know.
How happy are we that this guy's back?
Dalton, good to be back. It's been too long, but hope you all had a good summer.
I guess right before the summer, right?
Yeah, probably like the third week of April.
What'd you do this summer, buddy, other than just be really good at golf? Tell us about your summer.
Okay. Well, I spent time with the Golf Association of Philadelphia as a communications intern, so that was a lot of fun covering golf tournaments, going to the best courses in Philly. Doing a lot of commuting because I commuted from Kutztown, Berks County, down to Broomall on the Blue Route, so that was a good hike. Like you said, played some golf when I had some free time, but other than that, it was just interning, golf, basically all it was. So
Dalton
it was
a
lot of fun.
Summer than us.
A lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
Over under 15 rounds. How many rounds do you think you played this
over
summer? Well over?
Yeah, probably around 30. I played like once a week if I could, but there are some times where I played two or three times a week. Playing as much as I can, and then I got the itch from watching tournament golf to go out and play tournament golf, so I got the itch, and it sucked me in.
There you go.
But it's good to see you guys. Hope you guys had good summers as well.
I parred two holes this summer, and I thought that was like the best thing that ever happened to me, so that's like where my golf game is. Other than that, eights, nines,
yeah, you're shanking. Only supposed to take double par, right?
What? Yeah, I know. But like, if you know, if there's no one playing behind you, you get some cuts in. Has it helped? Nope. No.
Get some cuts in.
Yeah.
But we got a lot coming up in the show. Good to be back with you guys. Notre Dame taking down the Temple Owls, 49-16. Temple, as in last year's season opener, got beat up on the ground pretty good, allowing 422 rushing yards on 44 attempts, I believe. Josh Adams really had a day, and I think early on it kind of seemed like it was going to be that day for Notre Dame. They scored in 33 seconds and two plays on that first drive. So I guess the three of you guys made that trip. I guess, first of all, how was the experience? What's Notre Dame's press box like? How was the whole experience going to Notre Dame? And I guess kind of takeaways of the first week for the Owls.
In terms of the experience, it's nice. We drove out there. So it was Kyle, Matt, and I, and Don Otto, our photographer. Matt was asleep for most of the trip. Matt, we've learned, can fall asleep on command. Like, yeah, I'm... And he just passes out. Just like, it's just a little lamb in the back seat, just sleeping peacefully.
I brought a pillow, too, so that was
brought
nice.
A pillow.
Half the time you wouldn't use it, though. The pillow would be on the side, and you would just be asleep like
that. Yeah.
It worked.
But then he would tweet, Matt, yeah, what's up? He would just wake up right away. But, I mean, look, the campus is beautiful. The town around it, I don't think is anything really to tough. Okay. I was going to say, anything to write home about. Fan base is pretty cool, pretty knowledgeable.
Underwhelming noise-wise.
Yeah, it's not, you know, I don't... Did we talk about that last week? I feel like, or maybe we were just talking about when we were out there. Beaver Stadium, really loud, even if it's the obnoxious... What's that? Da-da-da-da-da. What is that song, actually? Yeah, Notre Dame only gets loud when there is a big play. It's not like a stadium, Notre Dame Stadium. It's beautiful. They got the new scoreboard. The press box is newish, a year or two old. Yeah. But it's only loud when there's a big play. Again, beautiful stadium. I'm not trying to tick off the sacrilegious piece of college football, all the fans that didn't go there. But it's a cool place to cover a game. The drive was long, but, you know, we all ate poorly.
Oh, yeah. Terribly. Yeah.
McDonald's, Burger King.
I ate cafeteria sushi for lunch today, and that's not even like the top five worst decisions I've made in the last week.
That comes in. Yeah, I managed to say something. We got to the one rest stop. I walked by a pizza stand and didn't realize that I thought I was saying under my breath. I was like, "This looks terrible." walked away and then decided to purchase McDonald's as if that was like so much better.
The employee that was running the shop like looked at him like, "I'd say to you, buddy."
I said, "Buddy, into my third mini Snickers of the day as we're sitting here right now." So I'm not the picture of health, but.
Yeah.
I mean, a fun trip.
For the love of God, do not talk into the microphone with your stickers.
It's authentic. It was a lot of fellowship. played 20 questions to get through the trip.
Yeah, Matt wasn't great at that.
No, terrible.
Yeah, I was pretty bad.
Let's spend the trip more about the game.
Yeah. The game, I don't know, my take on it, one of the things I wrote about, you know, I think we talked about this before, gets to a certain point with camp, then the season starts. And now we really kind of know, at least for that week, what's going on. The perception versus reality thing. The perception was that the defense was going to be ahead of the offense. And look, I mean, the reality is that Brandon Wimbush is a pretty good player. Josh Adams, really good player. You know, even though Temple has made a lot of progress as a program, you can see on the whole what a Notre Dame athlete looks like. And, you know, Temple's got some of those athletes, but not all those athletes. But at the end of the day, I think Isaiah Graham Mobley, Sean Bradley, Sam Franklin, Chappelle Russell, those guys are going to be really good football players. But the reality is those linebackers need some time to learn football at this level. Jeff Collins, Delvon Randall, those guys all kept saying misfits, misfits, misfits. And, you know, I asked Jeff, are you literally just saying that they were hitting the wrong gaps? He's like, yeah, that's exactly what I mean. So the reality is defense may not be ahead of the offense. Not that the offense is at any sort of lofty point right now. You know, the perception was externally, and Jeff admitted to this, oh, I think I was into the gamesmanship too much. They knew who the starting quarterback was going to be. As we suspected, they knew who it was going to be, but you know, we were saying maybe it's going to be Frank Neutile because all he has to do is get the ball out to people. We only see 20, 25 minutes of practice. There were stretches of practice that we saw where Logan Marchie was not throwing the ball well, but we don't see other stretches of it. The reality is they played one quarterback. There were no packages for Todd Senteo, no packages for Frank Neutile, and the offense really wasn't super innovative. There was some RPO stuff. We'll get into that a little bit later with one of the mailbag questions, but the reality is that Logan played. I don't think he was the reason they lost the game.
No.
He had some throws he'd like to have back. There were some throws, that, like the touchdown pass to Kirkwood, pretty good throw. But so now we kind of get a sense, at least for a week, of who they are. All the camp BS is aside, and I'm not saying the camp is BS, but all the talk of, oh, this might happen. The reality is that they were serious about using two kickers. I don't know if that was the best course of action. Again, I'm not saying Austin Jones just missed, decided the game, but we see, you know, you see flashes of guys that can play. Rockwell Armstead played really well in the first half. You know, didn't have much running room in the second half. I think it'll be interesting to see how they bounce back from it because it's been a while. I should know this. I'm the one. I got the stat from you for my story. This is their largest margin of defeat since 2008. Penn State, 45-3.
I think it's like 40. Nah, yeah, it might be 45.
Yeah, so, and, you know, for a couple of years, they've gotten used to saying, hey, I mean, hell, they should have beaten Notre Dame 2 years ago. They beat Penn State. They were used to competing, at least for the past couple seasons, competing in these games. The first half on Saturday was a return to getting blown off the map. You know, the pass from Wimbush to Equanimeous St. Brown and then the Josh Adams run. I mean, St. Brown, again, was recruited at the level he was for a reason. He's 6'5", 205. He can go up and get the ball. Josh Adams was a star at CB South. So they definitely have their work cut out for him, and now we get all the input from the fans and saying, are they coaching well? Are they playing well? Are they practicing well? Is this guy the right guy to be in the lineup? Is that person the right guy to be in the lineup? So for 1 week, it's good to just see real football, learn a little bit about the team, but they're going to be a work in progress. I think we've said before, we said a few times over the summer, that we'll start to get a really good idea of who they are by the time, what would you say, Matt, by the time they get to the USF game?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, you'll see Villanova, you'll see UMass, and, you know, hopefully if things go as planned, you would think that maybe you'll get a look at Frank Neutile, or maybe even a look at Todd Senteo. You might get a look at some of the other quarterbacks. But just going back to Notre Dame, I think I was pretty impressed with the way Logan Marchie played. I thought he was pretty poised. You know, obviously he did miss some throws. There's no denying that. He had some throws that they were just bad overthrows. And he looked a little off on some of those throws. But overall, I thought he played a pretty good game. I mean, when you look at the numbers, he threw for 245 yards, two touchdowns, no turnovers. So, you know, you have to be pretty pleased with the way Marchie played. I was surprised by the way he played. I was also surprised that he did start. I thought Neutile was going to be the starter. I think we were all kind of played by that. I thought Marchie was played surprisingly well. I think he just deserves to be the starter next week, and we'll see what happens. But as far as the defense goes, you know, the linebacker play is something that we'll focus on a lot. The linebackers, you know, we heard Delvon Randall bring it up. We heard Jeff Collins bring it up with the misfits. That's something we hadn't heard through all of training camp. And then once the season starts, you start to hear it. And, you know, it's just players going down the wrong gaps. And I watched, you know, the game again yesterday. And we were kind of just, you know, watching to see what Jeff Collins was talking about when he's referring to these misfits. And you see it a lot. I mean, you saw it. Don't get me wrong. They missed a lot of tackles, and they need to get better at tackling. And, you know, Sam Franklin had some some interesting ways of trying to go tackle people. Isaiah Graham Mobley had some interesting ways to tackle people. Sean Bradley missed some opportunities. All the linebackers missed some opportunities, but the gaps were an issue. I mean, you just saw Sean Bradley sometimes just going down the wrong hole, and if he would have went down the right hole, he's big enough, he's fast enough to go and probably make the play. So I don't think that's, you know, coach speak when Jeff Collins is saying that. I think they do need to get better at tackling, but those misfits are definitely something that's real and something that they need to fix going into Villanova.
Do you think that these last couple of years, obviously, were putting the Penn State game that they won 2 years ago aside, but Army and now Notre Dame, last two season openers for Temple, they struggled in both of them. Army was more of a grind-out game, but they kind of struggled in both of those, especially stopping the run.
You're saying is it a trend that they're struggling season openers?
What are your thoughts?
I think this one's just completely different. New staff, new coordinator, new head coach. I mean, the gut of your defense is completely new. And again, I think long term, I think these guys have a chance to be pretty good. And we haven't even gotten into like William Kwenku. Chappelle Russell did play some snaps. You know, I mean, people may not want to hear this, but, you know, Sam Franklin, Isaiah Graham Mobley, a lot of college linebackers used to be safeties. I mean, Sean Bradley has put on how much weight since he's gotten to Temple, but he's remained fast. You know, I think people have the immediate expectation Jeff Collins, SEC defensive coordinator at Mississippi State and Florida, his defense should be better. Well, yeah, they should have been better on Saturday, but these guys are still learning, and they're still, you know, Isaiah Graham Mobley looked at me yesterday and said, like, yeah, he just smiled. He's like, yeah, that's by far the biggest atmosphere I've ever been in. So, yeah, it took a couple plays to get used to it. And then after that, players will say football's football. But, yeah, I mean, it's one thing to tackle Rockwell Armstead in practice, and Rockwell's a big dude, and David Hood's a real player, and Jack Gardner's a big player. It's another thing that, oh, here comes Josh Adams, you know, a big-time NFL prospect coming at you off the left side of an offensive line that's going to be drafted in the first round probably in May. It's a different thing, and some of these guys are former safeties that are still learning how to wrap up players when the game counts. I think in this case, it's just a situation where new schemes, new players, and you know, Notre Dame just has better talent at this point. You know, Avery Williams, when he came in, we were not talking about Avery Williams like the way we talked about Avery Williams last year. We were not talking about Stephon Marshall the way we were talking about last year. These guys were MAC-level recruits. Tyler Matakevich, we talked about in reverent tones right away because he was just tackling everything that moved. You know, but think about, and I'm not saying they're going to have the same trajectory, we'll see, but I mean, Phil Snow was highly criticized when he first came in because of the way they were losing games. So I think it's just going to take some time, but now it's all part of the process. This fan base expects results because of what's happened over the past couple of years, but I don't think it's a case of like, you know, oh, they were so overwhelmed because it was an opener. I think they just got overwhelmed because they just played a really good line with really good talent. And again, like I keep going back to the gut of their defense, those three new linebackers really just, you know, experience really, really does matter. Again, long term, I think the ceiling for someone like Chappelle Russell or Graham Mobley or Sean Bradley is higher than the ceiling of Avery Williams. And Avery Williams got cut. Did he get practice squatted by the Texans? He got a chance to get into the NFL for a reason because he learned football and he was dependable and reliable, but he's shorter than those guys. So these guys are just new and inexperienced. I think that was a big piece of it. Other than, yeah, in addition to the fact that Logan's playing is getting his first start and other things went wrong for him.
You said experience is key. Well, I mean, the defense as a whole, obviously, you know, you didn't get the performance that you had hoped for. But on the bright side, at least, I mean, I thought the defensive backs as a whole played really well. You know, obviously they have experience there with the two safeties, Delvon Randall and Sean Chandler. I thought, you know, Delvon Randall led the team in tackles because they were just getting, so, you know, Josh Adams was beating the linebackers, beating everyone down the field. Sean Chandler, I thought, played a pretty good game too, and you saw Mike Jones, the graduate transfer, you know, have that interception where he almost returned it for a touchdown, and I thought Artrell Foster played a really good game too. So I mean, the defensive backs were probably a bright spot in this. You know, obviously the linebackers kind of got exposed, but they have a lot of experience back there, and they look pretty good to me.
All right, so I mentioned Isaiah Graham Mobley early on. He's a local kid. Redshirted last year, and again, probably has a high upside and probably has a bright future ahead of him, but he was one of the players that was made available to the media yesterday. I had a chance to talk to him about what that experience was like, what that atmosphere was like. And he admitted to, you know, being in a big atmosphere, but then kind of shaking it off, and this being a big learning experience for these guys. So here's a clip of Isaiah Graham Mobley talking about Notre Dame and just what they learned from that experience, and kind of, you know, what they'll have to do to bounce back from the loss on Saturday. Like, yet, you know, Saturday was kind of a rough game for you guys, the whole defense as a whole. I mean, obviously hindsight's 20/20. What did you guys see when you looked at the film?
When you go through the film, you see that you see a young defensive core trying to get their feet wet. You know, definitely you go over the film, and it's really not as bad as it may have seemed during the game. There's just a couple gap integrity things that we have to go over. But once we went over all of our went back to the basics, our fundamentals, you see that it's easy changes that we can make for the future.
How does the gap integrity stuff happen? Because Jeff kept saying there were misfits. He kept using that word. Delvon kept using that word. Does that come from just being excited, being on national TV, like what we're pursuing, or is it just stuff that they did schematically to get you guys out of that?
A couple of things schematically. I mean, we, for the most part, we had everything down, so I guess majority of it was being like excitement, just like overrunning things, just being like a defense for sure.
Did you guys, was this a tough spot for you guys? Because even when Phil Snow was here, he would say to us sometimes, like, yeah, we like Avery, Tyler's been great, Stephon's been great, but this group coming up behind them, this is like the group that we really recruited. They're taller, they're longer, they're leaner, they're really athletic. But then Saturday's a reminder that it still takes some time for things to come into fruition. Like, was this, did you kind of know that maybe like a big learning experience like this was coming in an environment like that?
For sure. It's you always want the game to turn out better than the way it did, of course. But things happen. So sometimes things don't go the way that you want to all the time. So you just go back and you look at it and you see, like, basically, like, you go through the experiences and whatnot. So, yeah.
What did they try to do with you guys? Because Wimbush is obviously really talented, but he was making his first start. Right. It looked like they were trying to get receivers on you guys and coverage and stuff like that. What did they try to do to you guys as a linebacker?
You could definitely see that they came out trying to attack us early. But I feel as though, like, if we really prepared, like, a little better, that like, we would be a different turnout.
I know some of you guys, like, you played defensive back in high school, Sam played defensive back, Sean played a lot of defensive back. So how, like, difficult was that transition, especially in your, like, first starting environment in Notre Dame?
Transitioning from safety to linebacker, the only big difference is more of the gap integrity, knowing, like, which gaps you're in, because that safety, you can just come down and you just go towards the ball wherever the ball seems to go. So just with linebacker, just getting used to the flow of the running back and then looking at all of your keys, the fullback, the tight end, and then just knowing which gap you're in, really.
Yeah, and I guess, like, is that something you guys, like, what have you guys seen, like, how they did tape this, like, since then, since, like, the Notre Dame?
Since then, we've seen that there's a couple misfits here and there, but if we clean those up, the game's a completely different game. It's a completely different turnout.
One Saturday, we're like, I grew up in this area. I grew up watching Temple. They're 10 times better than they used to be. And like, holy crap, I'm starting to have a name and got a lot of people around. Were there any moments where you kind of had to look around, take a deep breath, and be like, wow, the next snap's coming, and I got to kind of like swallow this all back?
Right. Yeah. In the beginning of the game, it was more of a, I was soaking everything in, getting used to the environment, because that was one of the biggest environments I've ever been in. So yeah, it's definitely a very new and a very great experience for my first college football game. But during the game, I feel like when you get into the game, the crowd wasn't there, so it wasn't really that effective.
Michael's wearing number one this week, and that has been Ventel's number. Now they're gonna rotate it. What do you think Mike's done to earn that number?
He's just been playing his game, you know. He's just been spinning all the right fits, making all the right plays, and just being a dog.
Do you think this is the coaching staff's way of saying, like, hey, that's such a thing's really serious, no one's number is safe if they're not earning it?
Oh, yeah, for sure, but we'll see what happens.
What do you see real quick from Nova? Like, I mean, they're an FCS program, but they're not your average FCS program. They've won a national championship before, even if it's not this current group. What do they look like offensively from what you've seen so far?
Also a very competitive team, very passionate about their offensive and defensive running schemes. Definitely a more of a zone read type offense, so similar to Notre Dame, but definitely not as big, not as physical, so I feel like we're going to have the upper hand.
So there's John talking with Isaiah Graham Mobley about the atmosphere at Notre Dame and, you know, what a player like that going into a big atmosphere can expect. But heading back to Logan Marchie, had a solid performance, didn't turn the ball over, completed more than 50% of his passes for 2 touchdowns. I guess, what do you guys take away from his performance, especially in his first real start because he hasn't really thrown that many college passes before the Notre Dame game.
I mean, I thought he played, like Matt said before, like I thought he played, you know, it wasn't a perfect game, but he's a tough study because, again, there were times where you would see him in practice last month, and some of his intermediate throws would just kind of go up and then hit the ground right away. You would look around and say, if he's their starter in the opener, I don't know. But, you know, we started hearing maybe Thursday or Friday that he might be the guy, but it was kind of hard to figure him. I thought he played fairly well. Again, he wasn't perfect, but, you know, this may sound like a minimalist thing to say. He's not the reason why they lost. They got beat up on defense. I thought his throw to Keith Kirkwood was good. I mean, for whatever it's worth, too, I thought he handled himself well post-game. You know, he said, he covered for Kenny Yeboah. He was like, I could have put that ball there a little bit better.
He could have. In hindsight, that was a pretty bad throw.
Yeah.
It was wide open, yeah. And Yeboah's had to run backwards to get it.
But then he wasn't helped. I mean, Keith Kirkwood had at least two drops that we saw where he could have helped out there.
But those were tougher catches. And then he sails a two-point conversion of Kenny Yeboah.
Yeah, they go right back to Kenny, which is, they can say, hey, we're confident in him. He's a good player. We're going to go right back to him. That jump pass that they should have completed for the two-point conversion. But I thought he was okay for the most part. He played better than I thought he would. I thought he would be completely overwhelmed in that environment. We'll see what he does against Villanova. I mean, if he plays at this level, again, I think it's really going to be a week-by-week thing. You know, could Todd Senteo be kind of waiting in the wings as he gets more experience, perhaps? Could Frank Neutile will be waiting in the wings? I don't know. But he played better than I thought he would. Again, I don't think he was helped by some of the drops. I don't think the line played terribly in front of him.
No, I think they played pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, there were some times where Cole Boozer got beat, but again, considering he's a former tight end, recently got up to 290, 295 pounds, played better than I thought he would. That doesn't mean he's an NFL right tackle, but I thought he was okay. I thought he played better than I thought he would. We'll see how he handles himself maybe when it gets down to, to USF, if he's still the starter then, but thought he handled himself fairly well in the environment.
Yeah, I guess I'd echo that. I mean, we can kind of pinpoint, five, six plays. Oh, I wish he'd done this, I wish he hadn't sailed this pass. But you could have done that with any P.J. Walker game, too.
Sure.
P.J. Walker, for as great of a college quarterback he was well-known for sailing a pass or two a game. Mm. The one thing I do kind of find interesting, and this isn't a slight against Logan, is if coming into the game, Logan's perceived difference from Frank Neutile was his mobility and his ability to kind of extend plays. If you knew going in, as Dave Patton had said, that they really weren't going to run those options a lot, we really weren't going to run the option, we really weren't going to show Logan's mobility, part of me is a little hard-pressed to believe then that if you're so confident about, okay, the best player for that situation on that day is going to play, I'm not sure why you start Logan there then,
right.
If you were never going to include that as part of the game plan. But I think all things considered, the environment, the lack of experience, the numbers are probably a little misleading. It's helped out a lot with Isaiah Wright's screen, but yeah, I think he played okay.
Yeah,
I thought he played pretty well. I thought it was interesting that they didn't run him. I mean, I asked Dave Patton, the offensive coordinator, just yesterday about that, and he said it was part of the game plan going in. They wanted to run a 2-to-1 run-to-pass ratio, but they didn't want to run Logan. They didn't want to get him hit. They didn't want to get him roughed up in his first college start. So I was a little bit surprised by that because, like Kyle said, that's the one thing that kind of separates him from Neutile. I don't think he has maybe a better arm than Neutile. I don't know if he has, the same arm as Neutile, but I think, he's definitely faster and more mobile than Neutile.
Frank Neutile probably doesn't have to jump to try and make that two-point attempt.
Yeah, I don't know what that was exactly.
Tebow jump pass.
The difference is Tebow made the throw.
Yeah. Yeah, that wasn't one of Marshy's bright spots. But overall, I thought he played pretty well. I thought the offensive line, we just touched on it a little bit, but I was pleasantly surprised by the offensive line, too. I thought, for the most part, they held up pretty well. Obviously, Cole Boozer probably got beat on one or two plays where he kind of just got pushed back. But, Dave Patton had said when they weren't blitzing, they weren't getting home. And it looked that way to me. I mean, I thought the offensive line, for the most part, held up. Obviously, in the second half, they were not able to run the ball very well with Raquel Armstead. I think he had 8 carries for 7 yards in the second half. Part of that was just how the game was flowing. Obviously, Temple needed to throw the ball down as much as they were. But, all in all, I thought it was a pretty good performance from the offensive line where, going into the season, I thought that was kind of a question mark.
I mean, with the disclaimer that Notre Dame's offensive line isn't great, going from Matt Hennessy making his first start at center against Notre Dame to now going to play an FCS opponent the next day, you would expect a fair amount of production from the line.
Yeah, and he settled down. I mean, he had that early.
No, I'm saying I think he did well. Yeah.
And how about the way they were getting downfield? I thought that was interesting where, you know, you didn't see that a whole lot last year, but when they were running the screenplays, there was a couple screenplays to Isaiah Wright that went for some big yardage. Brian Carter was getting downfield. Right. Cole Boozer was getting downfield like 20, 25 yards. I thought that was interesting. And, you know, I didn't know that Brian Carter would be able to get down that way. I thought even he, you know, I think we've criticized him a little bit in his time. But
he ends up getting the start over Sullivan. Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting in itself. I didn't expect that. When I was talking to some people like an hour before the game, I expected Carter and Jalen Robinson to be just coming off the bench and spelling, and they barely did that. I think the only play that Jalen Robinson came in was when Leon
went down with an injury.
Yeah. Missed one play. One of the things we're getting used to touch on it really quickly, I think before we move on to Villanova, I think a lot of what we get, we talked about it with, you know, fans or people who ask us this on Twitter, like, we're getting used to a new coaching staff and how they are with the media. And like Jeff said, I engaged a little bit too much in gamesmanship. We weren't going to play three quarterbacks. We knew Logan was going to be the guy. It's still kind of hard. Like, look, no coach will, like we said before, opens up the playbook and says, hey, here's exactly what we're going to do this week. Any coach is going to protect his players to a certain extent.
Sure.
This staff's a little hard to figure. You know, not just with the quarterback stuff, but, you know, when Dave said yesterday, like, yeah, if we weren't blitzing, we weren't getting home. Well, at least on one play, one guy who did get home and caused something that could have been a turnover, Karamo Diabate shoots up the middle, forces Brandon Wimbush into something. It's a throw. I don't even know if you call it a throw that DeAndre Kelly should have picked off. Karamo shoots right up the gap. That's more than they had gotten in the past. Then Karamo's not even on this above the line depth chart. And somebody asked him, I don't know if you did or somebody else asked him yesterday, where's Karamo? Well, he's just not, you know, like, so I don't get it. Who knows? Maybe he.
Well, I mean, he also had a bad play where he made illegal hands to the face. And
sure. Yeah. So it's kind of hard to figure, just, like, you know, again, like, yeah, they kept talking about Adrian Sullivan, Jalen Robinson. They're having great camp. Cole Boozer goes out there and starts, and Brian Carter goes out there and starts. So it's still, I think we're still kind of getting used to the flow of what these guys tell us, you know, what we're seeing in practice versus what's actually going on in practice. And again,
to summarize, they hate us.
They hate us. They
hate the media.
We haven't even talked about, too, like the Ventel Bryant thing. You know, Ventel Bryant did not make the trip to Notre Dame. Has he had a hamstring injury? Yes. But now they are saying, well, we're going to open up that number one to, you know, earning that single digit. The difference is when they did that back in 2014, they had not awarded the number one yet. Tavon won it. I think one of our readers pointed out today that Hershey Walton won it 1 week, but Ventel Bryant had his number taken away. And you know, I asked Jeff, you know, hey, is this a disciplinary thing? He's like, no, Ventel was selfless, but we've just heard from too many people that we trust that, you know, part of this is a little disciplinary. He might have had the hamstring issue, but he didn't even travel with the team out there. So if there was a lesson to be learned, I hope Ventel learned it. I mean, he was on Twitter saying, this is on me. Am I about to try to read the tea leaves of a college student on social media? Yeah, but, like, I mean, I think typically if someone's hurt, not saying this is on me. So something's going on with Ventel Bryant there. I don't think it's ultra serious, but he's got to get his act together this week. So they've got some stuff to sift through.
So this week the Owls are back at the Link for the first time this year. They're going to take on number 6 in the FCS, Villanova, who beat Lehigh 38-35 last weekend. Villanova's got a couple of guys to take note of. Junior quarterback Zach Bedarsik, 17 of 23, 209 yards, 2 touchdowns last week. Dual threat guy, as they saw with Wimbush last Saturday. And senior safety Rob Roll, named the preseason Colonial Athletic Association's Defensive Player of the Year. And he has a couple All-America nods and awards. Mm-hmm. And he led FCS with 7 interceptions last year. So Villanova definitely has some capabilities. They're one of the better FCS programs out there. I guess, what do you guys expect from the Owls this weekend, kind of getting the rust off at Notre Dame?
I'm not going to lie and tell you that I've watched the last 14 Villanova football games.
But it would be more entertaining if you had
see a lot on
the main line, like, down at, yeah, like Kyle.
The thing that sticks out the most to me, other than every now and then you look at their roster, you go, oh, I remember that kid. Oh, Temple was kind of in there, like, kid, they moved on, et cetera. Mm-hmm. The offense is kind of small. Ryan Bell, their tight end, you kind of see why a lot of these kids end up at the FCS level. Ryan Bell has a good game against Lehigh, 5 catches, 78 yards, touchdown. He's like 6'1.5", 220 pounds. Taurus Phillips, their slot receiver, he's like 5'8". So there's a situation where, for all of the size advantages that Notre Dame had over Temple at some point. St. Brown was a lot bigger than any Temple defensive back. Temple should have a fair amount of those advantages against Villanova. Villanova's defense didn't exactly blow me away with their performance against Lehigh. So you would hope that maybe this is a game that Temple can get its offense going. Maybe Rockwell Armstead does get the ball 25, 27 times. Maybe this is a situation where it's over by the third quarter and you see a lot. You see Frank Neutile. You see Anthony Russo. But all that being said, it's still a quote-unquote rivalry game. These are guys that played against each other in high school. It's two schools that don't necessarily like each other. We all remember, or at least John and I remember, you guys might have been 13 years old. We all remember the 2009 season where Temple goes to their first bowl game the first time in 30 years. They lost on a last-second field goal to Villanova to start the season.
Yeah,
I remember that.
I
might have been 13, but I remember.
I took a cab back from the Link to Temple. And the cab driver asked me what happened. So they lost in the last second field goal. And to this day, so I remember this, he goes, "Well, that's just Temple being Temple, man." That was the end of the conversation. And then obviously Temple win. I think they lost the next week to Penn State, and then they went 9 straight games, and everything ended up being fine. But I feel like this game should be a little bit of a mismatch in Temple's favor, but just given the other circumstances, it might end up being a contested game.
The only thing that makes them dangerous is even though there's a new head coach, Villanova, and a lot of FCS programs are like this. Not that the FBS programs aren't like this, but they do what they do well, and it's just wash, rinse, repeat.
Right.
You know, Andy Talley was there for years and years and years.
Still there.
Yeah.
As
an advisor. They know their system well. They know their offense well. They know their defense well. And they're going to, as cliche as it sounds, they're going to empty the tank against Temple. Jeff talked a lot. He spent a considerable amount of time. I don't even think it was really coach speak. He spent a considerable amount of time yesterday talking about how they'll run trick plays, and they run really, really well. He said they ran a double reverse pass or something like that, and he said it was as well executed as anything I've seen. And, you know, they've got, again, we talked about this before we started recording. Like, yeah, you know, there's an upper tier of FCS programs, and there's like this huge drop off. So they are ranked 6th in the country for a reason, but Kyle said there are matchup problems. The one area of concern for Temple is, you know, Villanova will, I think they're really going to empty the tank and run a lot of, I don't know if they'll run a lot of trick plays, but they're going to get their best effort from them. And if Villanova does get any sort of momentum from a trick play, be it complex or not so complex, or some sort of big play where the linebackers get caught in the wrong spot, then they can get momentum off of that. And if you have a younger part of the defense that goes, oh no, this is the game we were supposed to win, and then
right.
they start backtracking, and they don't have that mentality that worked over the past couple years, which was get the game to the fourth quarter and it's ours, then they could be in a little bit of trouble. Otherwise, I agree with Kyle. This is a game where you should be like, there's a mismatch there. There's a mismatch there. We should get the ball to this guy. Get the ball to that guy. That guy should be blown off the line.
One thing that does kind of concern me, I'm not even going to try to pronounce his last name, Zach B., the quarterback. Mobile has 1,100 career rushing yards.
He's a new rapper, Zach B.
72 yards last week. Brandon Wimbush showed you can run out of the quarterback spot against this offense, so that'll be concerning. You've always been able to run out of the quarterback against Temple's defense.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, I mean, I think this is one of these games that I'd be lying to you if I've seen, you know, much Villanova football.
We're all coming clean on our knowledge or lack of knowledge of Villanova football.
I go there,
football.
I buy cocoa for 50 cents, I put my little Letterman jacket on, I go into that high school stadium, and I watch CAA football.
I was at some place on Lancaster Avenue the other day, I texted you guys and said, I'm here with my wife, and there were like four Villanova players walking out.
Was that bicycle by Kicycle or whatever it was?
No, that was across the street. But they were all freshmen. I did not take the time to talk to them and be like, hey.
What were you going to talk to them about? Hey, fellas.
I wasn't.
Hey, yeah, just in the
you always make me sound like a 4-year-old child who's just fresh out of preschool. I don't know. Go ahead, Matt. I'm sorry.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think this is one of the games where, you know, the match, if you just look at the matchups, Temple, you know, Villanova is going to be overmatched when they play Temple. You know, the running quarterback would concern me a little bit. I think Villanova is going to make this interesting, to be honest. I think, you know, this is still a young team, and if Temple were playing Villanova in November, I would say that they would probably win by 35 points. But if this game being played in week two, where Temple's defense, and especially the linebackers, look confused for a large portion of the game, I don't know if that magically gets fixed in just 1 week. I think they can, you know, improve some things and get better. I don't know if it's just going to be like a drastic 180 turn where they just, you know, completely look, you know, different. So I still think the linebackers are going to make their fair share of mistakes. But I think this is one of the games where the offensive line looked good to me against Notre Dame, against a solid Notre Dame defensive line. It's, you know, not, I don't think they have a bunch of first-round picks on that defensive line, but they're solid. So I think this is going to be a game where the offensive line is just going to be able to push their way through. I think Raquel Armstead is going to have a big day, and I think Temple's going to be able to run the ball enough and, you know, chew up some clock and do their 2-to-1 run-to-pass ratio, and I think they're going to be able to, you know, come out with a win. But I don't think it's going to be easy, and I think it's Villanova is going to give them a good fight.
Yeah, Nova only had one sack last week against Lehigh, and he came from the linebacker position. The defensive line really wasn't able to get past the vaunted engineers of Lehigh Mountain. So, yeah, like, I'd agree with Matt that I would expect Temple's offensive
line. The vaunted engineers of Lehigh Mountain?
That's literally what I just said, yeah.
So, with that said, who do you guys like? Obviously, Matt likes Temple. What do you get? What score you got there, Matt?
I like Temple. I mean, I think it's going to be pretty close. I'll go Temple 27 and Villanova 17.
I think Temple's offense puts up more than that. I would be surprised after giving 35 to Lehigh if Nova only holds Temple at 27. I would say Temple 38, Nova 20.
Yeah. You're going to think I had 38-21 in my head.
Well, I said 20, so let's hope that they missed that extra point.
Yeah, I think Temple wins. Give me the Owls 35-24, something like that. I think they're able to bounce back this week for sure. It's time for our sometimes serious and sometimes silly mailbag. We appreciate all the questions on the message boards and Twitter. First question comes from JHG722. Did anyone ask Jeff Collins or Dave Patenaude what the heck that offensive scheme was? I still don't understand what the game plan was to attack Notre Dame's defense. And spoiler, how are your dogs?
Well, that was good. How's my dog?
Riggins is the best. We got to spend some time with him after when we got back. I saw him before because as Kyle called, I stopped in to use the bathroom before we left. Riggins is awesome. Will you agree?
Yeah, Riggins is a cool dog. I like Riggins.
Thank you.
Threw the ball
talk
the
more
back
about
guy.
My dog.
I love him.
We could have a whole podcast about Riggins.
I love him. So in response to Jeff's question here, I mean, we talked. The one thing I'll add before I get to Brian's answer is, like, obviously you go in trying to win that game, but I wonder how much of this offense, whatever Dave Patenaude offense is, how much we've seen. I'm not saying that they were going to resign themselves to the fact that they were going to lose this game, but I wonder how much they really did want to unwrap in that game. Maybe they have some more plays in mind. Maybe they do want to make Logan Marchie a little bit more mobile in the future, in weeks to come. But we've talked back and forth with Brian Driscoll, who does a fantastic job as a football analyst for the Notre Dame Rivals site for Blue and Gold Illustrated. So we had been talking about, you know, Brian coached, he played in college, coached at Duquesne, coached a few other places, some D2, D3 schools, and I asked him what he thought as a former player of what Dave Patenaude did and what his game plan was like. He did a really good detailed breakdown leading up to the game. So, Jeff, I'm going to read you a snippet, or more than a snippet, of an email exchange I had with Brian in response to what Dave's game plan was like. So he said, I was really impressed with what I saw from Patenaude when breaking down Coastal Carolina, but I wasn't overly impressed with his adjustments and some of his calls during the game. Temple had a really nice game plan early. They attacked Notre Dame with their perimeter game, the stretch, speed option. That opened up some cutback lanes. Dave had some play actions early that opened up some opportunities, and the screen game was rolling. Temple had 87 yards rushing on its first 18 carries, or on the attempts just to the backs. Notre Dame adjusted, and Temple had just 16 yards rushing on its final 16 running back attempts, and Temple didn't have any answers from a coaching standpoint. And he's right. You know, they just, you know, Raquel Armstead got shut down. I would argue that, just to cut in for a second, that Raquel did break some tackles in the first half and was really, really running well. Brian goes on to say Temple had a matchup advantage with Keith Kirkwood, Adonis Jennings against Julian Love, but it rarely took advantage of that matchup. Notre Dame's safeties were very active coming into the box, and Temple did not look to exploit that with any deep shots. I know there were some concerns about the protections, but they had to find a way to take a few more shots. One area where Temple just gashed Notre Dame was with its screen game, which made it surprising he didn't go to it a bit more when the game was still in doubt. That was the most surprising part of the game for me. Overall, I feel Patenaude wasn't able to keep up with Mike Elko when it came to the coaching chess match. Now, we talked last week in our preview about the fact that Mike was Wake Forest defensive coordinator. Dalton, you were at that game. And so he was familiar with Temple's personnel. He may not have been familiar with this exact scheme, but he was familiar with the personnel. Once Elko adjusted, there was little Temple could do offensively, despite having a few chances to get back into the game against the Notre Dame team that constantly allowed opponents to get back into the game the year before. So, hey, I mean, I would tend to agree with all that. You know, he did a pretty good job of breaking it down. So, you know, I don't know if you guys have anything else to add. I mean, Matt, you talked to Dave yesterday, and he said they wanted to try to stay true to a ratio, and again, I don't know what they're planning to unwrap, you know, this week, next week, in terms of opening up their offense a little bit more, but yeah, I would agree with that. I think they had some chances. Again, would the game have turned out completely differently if they had hit on a couple of things? I don't know, but I think it's a really solid analysis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd agree with that for the most part, but yeah, just talking to Dave yesterday, he's like I said earlier, he said they came into the game with an idea that they were going to go 2-1 run to pass ratio. I think in the beginning of the game, into the second quarter, they stuck with that for the most part. They ran the ball effectively. Raquel ran for 11 for 60 yards in the first half. So I think they did what they wanted to do on offense for the most part. Obviously, you know, they didn't score touchdowns, but between the 20s, I thought they did what they wanted to do for the most part. So, yeah, that was the game plan, you know, when I asked Dave. And, you know, as Dave said, he also, you know, the game plan was not to run Logan. They didn't want him to get hurt. They didn't want him to get, you know, roughed up. So that, I think going forward, like he said, that running Logan will be part of the game plan. But that was not part of the game plan against Notre Dame. He obviously isn't going to say if it's going to be part of the game plan ahead of Villanova. But I would assume, you know, that there's probably going to be some more opportunities for Logan to run moving forward.
Didn't he also say to you, too, he said, well, we did get Jagger going a little bit, and we got David Hood going a little bit. And
yeah, because I asked him, I asked him about the fact that they weren't able to really run the ball with Raquel in the second half. He only went 8 carries for 7 yards in the second half. But Jagger Gardner, as he pointed out, and even David Hood, broke out for a couple runs in the second half. So, you know, his defense was that, you know, Jagger and David Hood happened to be in when they ran the ball effectively, and it just, you know, was what the defense was giving them at the time.
And Armstead also left briefly to go to the locker room, right, and came back out.
For like I think that was a little bit of fake news.
But they
think he literally went in to, like, get, like, his Clayton readjusted.
Yeah, and I don't even know if there was an issue there, and the staff doesn't, by practice, they just don't talk about it.
No, he was literally off the field for one play.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think you see a more conservative approach, obviously, first-time starting quarterback in a big environment. I don't think they want to really open up the playbook too much. They kind of wanted to keep it conservative, and that was a really good analysis by Brian. Next question comes from B.A. Carlson, 21, on the message boards. I know it's still early in his career, but by the time his time is up at Temple, do you think Isaiah Wright will be the most dynamic playmaker to have ever worn the cherry and white? Can you list, in your opinion, the top playmakers you've seen play for Temple?
I mean, I think ever might be a little...
Yeah,
premature, and there's never no way to know that. I will say, driving back from Notre Dame, we all kind of agreed he was the player you looked at and you were like, yep, he can play for Notre Dame.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's the guy that had the athleticism, he's the guy that has that size, he's the guy that really has that speed.
He belongs.
I mean, I think that's like the one positive to Ventel Bryant not making that trip, is that opened up a lot more snaps for Isaiah Wright, and he got to show that he had more catches of receiving yards yesterday than he has entire freshman or not yesterday Saturday than he has entire freshman year. Do I think that he has a chance to go down as a very good playmaker? Do I think he has next level ability? Sure. Do I know for a fact that he's better than Paul Palmer, that came in second in the Heisman? Do I know that he's better than Bernard Pierce, who had 27 touchdowns in 1 year? Do I know that he's better than Matt Brown, who was dynamic that? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I guess if to answer the second part of that, who are the best playmakers you've seen? Cherry White. The first names that come to mind to me are Matt Brown, who would always kind of make nothing out of something, or something out of nothing. Guys like that, and then, yeah, guys like Paul Palmer.
Yeah, Jihad was pretty good, too.
Jihad was good.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Even though he left school too early, Walter Washington was a pretty dynamic quarterback, a JUCO quarterback who came in, but I think it's a little early to put Isaiah up there in that, you know, to say, will he be the most dynamic playmaker ever? I don't know, but I would agree with Kyle. We did have that conversation way back. Like, he really, it's I think if they hadn't even utilized him on Saturday, then that, I think that would just be another layer that you throw at Dave. Like, where the heck was Isaiah Wright? But they did utilize him and used him in the screen game, and I think they can probably get him downfield, too.
I understand people might be a little upset, like, oh, you didn't run Wildcat with him, you didn't do this. Yeah, you had design screens to him. Like, they made conscious efforts to get Isaiah Wright the ball.
Yeah, and when they did, it worked.
Yeah.
Next question comes from Temple Al at Philly_bully on Twitter. Noteworthy recruits attending this weekend and Nova prediction, which we already did.
Deion Foreman's coming, the athlete from, assuming he can get out in front of Hurricane Irma.
Yeah, maybe he's trying to escape it.
Man, maybe. Come up to Philly.
Yeah.
He has offer from Wake Forest. I'm a little kind of on the fence about Temple's interest in him, to be honest. He seems like one of those guys that if they wanted him, he would have committed by now. It seems like he's been wanting to commit to Temple for a while. I don't know if that's just a, hey, hold off until you actually see the campus before you commit thing or what. But
Yeah, I mean, you always have to be kind of skeptical with any kid from Florida. But as far as the other kids go, hopefully we'll have some more on the site later on this week.
Yeah, I would say check back on the site tomorrow and Friday leading up to the game. We'll probably have a few more names for you. And we already had our Nova predictions.
Next question comes from James Rutfield on Twitter at JRUSerious. If Temple football flew commercial, which overpriced snacks would Collins buy from the airport mini mart?
Well, definitely a Diet Mountain.
Yeah,
he was drinking
that
free game.
That's the drink.
Even though Temple's a Coke school and that's a Pepsi product, he still drinks Diet Mountain Dew.
I can see it like an assortment. Diet Mountain Dew, there's a little bit of Chex Mix in there.
Yeah, some combos. Some like a weird flavor of combos.
He's also probably one of the guys that buys like the James Grisham novel, like, oh, I'm going to read this on the flight, and just never does.
Yeah, he gets
like,
yeah.
Like, I'll pay $14.99 for The Firm, and then he just never reads The Firm.
I'm from the South.
I'm not sure. He ends up just like watching the movies on
I'm from the South, so I just listen to the book on tape.
I watched when I was flying to Wisconsin last month, I watched like Allied. I think it was Brad Pitt and like some girl, and his wife's like a spy or something, doesn't know. And I towards the end, like, the girl dies, spoiler, and I could feel myself kind of like, not like welling up, but like, oh, I'm a little affected by that. And I read afterwards that air flights actually make you like more emotional and things like that. It's like the difference in like air pressure and the altitude will make you more susceptible to like those highs and lows. Or maybe I found the one academic journal that supported my cause. But apparently that's the case. Because I was like, this is a very mediocre movie. Why am I upset that she's dead?
I don't know. It gives us something to think about.
Yeah. One last question. The last question comes from Storman Foreman on Twitter. Why the Russo hype but none for Frank Neutile? Standout three quarterbacks from power high schools with Power 5 offers. So weird to me.
And he goes on to say in another part of the question, am I wrong in thinking it's unfounded? Maybe it's my North Jersey bias toward Bosco, meaning Don Bosco, probably everyone else around here knows Archbishop Wood High School. So he's talking about the fact they're both three-star quarterbacks. One thing they have in common right now, neither one of them's playing.
I mean, that second part about being North, maybe it's North Jersey bias or his North Jersey bias. I mean, people here know Bosco, too.
Yeah.
The Don Bosco prep name's pretty big. I guess it's probably because, well, one, Frank got an offer from UVA, like, last minute. Like, they tried flipping him after a while. When Temple flipped Anthony Russo, they flipped him from a guy, program they perceived to be a rival in Rutgers. He was an Elite 11 quarterback. I think he had another Power 5 offer instead of Rutgers. And, like, it kind of just, yeah, he had Trent Dilfer calling him Matt Ryan. Like, there were other aspects to it.
Yeah. And then
Frank Neutile, his senior year, I think lost his job halfway through and then regains it towards the end.
Due to injury, because the other kid got hurt,
yeah, but
right?
He got benched because he wasn't performing.
Yeah. And there was also as of now, doesn't really matter. But yeah, Les Miles came in at the last minute and said,
yeah.
Hey, you know, Anthony, we want you to come down and visit LSU. So when people hear that stuff, they're like, wow, LSU wants one of our guys. Rutgers had one of our guys committed, so it was a big thing, and Wood was having a really good year, and he had good receivers to throw to, but, you know, unless something changes, you know, I mean, it seemed like Frank was the runner-up in this competition, and Russo might be fourth, you know, for what we know, you know, again, I don't know.
Yeah, but Russo's going to have more of an opportunity than to, yeah, like, if Temple's up 42-7 against Villanova, Anthony Russo is more likely to see the field than Tyson Tao just because to preserve the redshirt freshman.
Yeah, that's the one thing. That'll be one of the other interesting topics that comes up is if they get good enough quarterback play where they can start winning games. If you beat Nova, if you beat UMass, somehow if you go down to Tampa and you beat USF and you do it without, you know, if you get decent enough quarterback play, then if you kind of clear that hurdle, then you might be truly redshirting Tyson Tao if they think as highly of him as we think they do.
That's going to do it for us this week. We appreciate the questions, and we will talk to you next week.